Sign up today for the Film Comment Letter. It's a free weekly digital newsletter featuring original film criticism and writing by Film Comment's editors and brilliant contributors.
The letter delivers exclusive features, reviews, interviews, streaming picks, news, and more directly to subscribers' inboxes before they're published on filmcomment.com the following Monday.
Sign up today at filmcomment.com. Welcome to the Film Comment podcast. I'm Devika Girish, the editor of Film Comment. This is a very exciting time at our parent organization, Film at Lincoln Center. On Monday, April 29th, we host our annual Chaplin Award Gala. And this year's honoree is a beloved screen icon, the dude, the star man, the legend, Jeff Bridges. In advance of the gala, I sat down with Bridges to take a look back at his long and versatile career. Our conversation was inspired by a painting that Bridges made several years ago called Jeff Makes a Decision, which portrays the actor rowing down a river, getting sucked into various whirlpools. Taking a cue from that painting, we talked about some of Bridges' most iconic roles, including in The Last Picture Show, Winter Kills, Tron, Crazy Heart, and many more, and how he ended up in those movies, often in spite of himself. Bridges also talked about the great influence that his parents, both actors, have had on him, some of the crazy on-set stories behind his greatest performances, and what TV shows he's enjoying right now. I hope you enjoy the conversation. And for more on Bridges' career and legacy, look out for an essay by critic Bilge Eberi on our website, filmcomment.com, on Monday. Jeff, it is such an honor and pleasure to have you on the Film Comment podcast in advance of this year's Film at Lincoln Center Chaplin Gala, where you are the awardee, something we're all very excited about. Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Devika. I'm excited.
And, you know, so we have a tradition on the podcast when we're interviewing filmmakers or writers, whoever it is, we always start by asking them to introduce themselves very briefly. And I found that this is actually a very fun exercise, especially for people like you who are constantly described by other people. How would you introduce yourself?
Well, I'm an actor. I'm Lloyd Bridges and Dorothy Bridges' kid. I think a lot of my success has to do with being born in the bed of those folks. I guess I could say I'm a product of nepotism. You know, I don't know if I would have gotten into show biz if my dad wasn't so excited about it and loved it so much. What can I say? Acting, you know, I'm a musician. I like to do music. I like to paint. I like to do ceramics.
A Renaissance man, shall we say?
I don't know a Renaissance man. I like to support causes that will hopefully bring the world into the kind of the positive dream I have for not only myself, but my kids, my grandkids. So I support different organizations that might manifest that dream. I guess that kind of sums me up. I don't know. I could go on and on.
Well, Well, we have plenty of time to get into a lot of it. That's a good start. So usually when I've done this sort of conversation with the Chaplin Gala awardee, I like to go through five iconic scenes from their career. But I just could not narrow it down in your case. You've just had too many incredible but also extremely different performances. So I thought I would do something a little different, which is maybe talk through some roles in your career that I'm curious why you chose or how they came into your life? Because you've talked also in your interviews about the importance of casting and about your process of decision-making that's really unique. I read this detail in a profile of about you by Janet Maslin from the 90s, where she described a doodle that you had in a notebook called Jeff Makes a Decision, which is you rowing down a river and there's all these whirlpools and one of them might just suck you in. And you said that's how you choose your roles and your projects.
That's funny that you mentioned that. Yeah, it's a painting I made of a dream that I had. And the dream is that I'm rowing down this river and my task is to get down the river and avoid these huge whirlpools. The vortex of each whirlpool is a beautiful jewel. And I'm rowing down this, I missed that one. Oh, I almost got caught. And then the painting is as me actually getting caught, kind of getting mesmerized by the jewel at this one particular whirlpool. And that's, I'm stuck and I'm caught now, you know, and that name of that painting is Jeff Makes a Decision. And that's my decision process, that I do my best to avoid going to work and making a movie because I know what it takes. You know, it takes time away from my family. And as I mentioned, all these other things I like to do. So I know what the cost of that is. But if it's too beautiful or the people I'm working with are too, you know, excite me too much, that's what I end up doing. But I spend a lot of energy resisting.
Right. And so that's why I was curious to maybe go through some of your roles and see how you ended up doing them, because you're also famous for turning down roles before finally being talked into them.
There's another thing, you know, I mentioned, I think, off the top, being the son of Lloyd Bridges, my dad, who's a wonderful actor. And I remember when I was just a kid, you know, I was maybe 8 years old or so, and he had this TV series called Sea Hunt. It was very popular. And he'd often say, hey, you want to come work with Dad? You know, come to the office and we can do some playing, get to get out of school, you know. And I saw how he struggled after that was a very successful series. And he was so great in the part of Mike Nelson. He played a skin diver that people thought he was a skin diver, that they gave some acting lessons to, that kind of thing. A wonderful compliment. But he struggled with the fact that after Sea Hunt, he got a lot of skin diving scripts. Everybody thought that's what so he developed this very strong persona. And so I in my career, I saw that and I said, gee, I want to really mix up my stuff. I saw that for a couple of reasons. I think these, you know, strong personas, they can be, you know, wonderful, but they also kind of pigeonhole you. And I think it makes it more difficult for the audience to see you in a particular role if you've got this persona that has been developed such a strong way that's hard for the audience to get that out of your mind. So I really, especially in my career, I really tried to mix it up so people would be pleasantly confused about who I was, you know.
Yeah, and your resume really does testify to that. I want to get into many roles, but actually I do want to start by talking about Sea Hunt.
I can just tell one other funny story of my dad's came up.
Uh-huh.
I did a movie called Blown Away.
Where he played in that movie too.
He was in that movie too. Yeah. He played my uncle. And they were casting the part. And I said to the producer, I said, you know, I had an idea for an actor who might be great for the part of the uncle. He looks a bit like me. He's a wonderful actor. Lloyd Bridges, have you heard of him? And the guy laughed. He said, oh, yeah, your dad's great, but he's really more of a comedian. I said, what are you talking about? He says, "Well, Airplane, those airplane movies." So I said, "You're kidding me." He's Shakespeare. He does comedy. He does everything. He's an actor. I said, "You're not going to make him come in and read, are you?" And he said, "Would he do that? Would he audition?" And I said, "Oh God." So my dad was totally up for it. He says, "Come on, let's do it." And he got the part. But it was another example of creating these personas that are hard to
Yeah.
show.
You played some parts on Sea Hunt. And
Yes.
I went and actually watched a couple of those
Oh, you're pretty good
episodes.
at embarrassing.
No, I was actually really amazed by how confident you were in front of the camera. And I wanted to ask you about your memories of that because maybe it's because you saw your parents do this and you saw your dad on the set and he was there with you.
Well, you mentioned Sea Hunt in my mind. All kinds of things fire off in my mind. One is, did you see the one of me in the cave?
No, I don't think so. I saw one
In
where you're like thrown off a pier, I think. And
the cave?
is
The
and
one that
then
pops in, the one that I did a few of them, the one that pops into my mind was this one where I'm get lost. I get trapped in a cave with this I think, a young girl who happened to be my girlfriend at the time, my next door neighbor, Andy Kaplan. And we were stuck in a cave and had to sing. Oh, Susanna, I think. Oh, no, she'll be coming right. What was the song? Some kind of song. And I was so cold. I remember being so cold. The Sea Hunt is some of my earliest acting memories and being cold and saying having to say the lines and all I could do is inhale. It was so cold I couldn't. Oh, but those are some Sea Hunt memories.
I mean, what was it like being on that set, and did that teach you something fundamental about acting, or at that moment was it just sort of some, a play for you?
My dad, he taught me all the basics of acting. We'd be working for a part or thing, and I'd be sitting on his bed, and he'd be going over the lines. And he says, "Not just about saying the lines. You got to listen to what the other person is saying. Would that affect you? And now go out of the room. Now come back and do it a completely different way." So he kind of taught me the basics that way. But the thing I really learned from him, and working with him especially, was the joy that he approached the work. He really enjoyed, all different aspects from doing what we're now just talking about it, or doing it with all the other actors and the directors. And that joy was kind of contagious. It would spread through the group, and everybody say, "Oh yeah, this is kind of fun what we're doing." And then everybody kind of got relaxed, and out of that relaxation, I think your best work comes when you're that way. So that's the main thing I learned from him, was just the joyful approach to the work.
Wow, that's very touching. I know that you, so the company she keeps, your first on-screen appearance as a baby is 1951. And then when you're in your, I think, early 20s, you actually don't want to be an actor. You're considering not going into this profession that you maybe, feel like, ah, this is what my parents do, and following in their footsteps. And then the Iceman Cometh happens. And from my understanding, from what I read, your interviews, that was a very pivotal experience for you that maybe changed a little bit your attitude towards acting. Can you tell me about how that role happened and what that experience was like?
Can I tell a little story about the company she keeps?
Yes, please do.
I think I was like, what, 6 months old, little baby. And my parents were visiting a friend of theirs who was directing. I think it was John Cromwell, I believe, the director. And there was a scene in a train station. and they needed a baby to be held by the actress in the scene, Jane Greer. Wonderful actress. And my mother said, "Oh, here, Jane, take my baby." And I was a rather happy baby. And the baby in the scene is supposed to cry. So my mom said to Jane, "Oh, Jane, just pinch him. Just pinch him a little bit and he'll cry." And she did. And lo and behold, I cried for the in the scene. And now we cut, well, maybe 35 years later, and I happen to be working with Jane Greer in a movie called Against All Odds, based on a
That's right.
wonderful movie she made called Out of the Past with Robert. And we're having a scene, and I say, "Jane, I'm having a little trouble emoting here. Could you just do the old pinch trick to me?" And that's one of the wonderful things
Wow.
about acting in the profession of making movies is that you they're like little lifetimes that each one you get very have these intense relationships and then you're gone, but you'll meet these same characters again, the people that you work with, and you said, "Oh yeah, I remember a lifetime that we shared together, remember?" So that's one of the fun aspects of what I do. But then now I'll get back to the question. Iceman Cometh. So I talked about my resistance, how I like to resist. I need to be really pulled, dragged to the party, so I had just finished a movie called The Last American Hero, and it was a wonderful experience working with Lamont Johnson, a great director. I'm thinking of it now. Gary Busey, a good old a buddy of mine, he played my brother in it. We had a great time. I played a lot of music on the set, had a lot of fun. And often I have experience after making a movie, man, I don't want to pretend anymore. I just want to live my life, do my other art and so forth. And I just got through with the Last American Hero. My agent called all excited and he said, "Oh, you've just been offered a wonderful role. John Frankenheimer is doing the famous play, Eugene O'Neill, The Iceman Cometh. And you'll be working with Frederick March and Lee Marvin and Robert Ryan and this wonderful cast." And I said, "Oh, thanks, Jack. Just tell him I'm bushed. I'm too wiped out. Thanks for the offer, but no." And then about 5 minutes later, Lamont Johnson, the director of The Last American Hero, called me up in a very deep voice. He said, "Jeff, I understand you've turned down working with John Frankenheimer and The Iceman Cometh." And I said, "Yeah, Monty, I'm bushed, man." And he says, "You're bushed. You're an ass." And he hung up on me. And like you said, I wasn't sure if I wanted to, even to this late date, I had maybe been, I don't know how many movies I had under my belt. Very early on in my career, I was nominated for an Academy Award in the Last Picture Show. So I had some. Yes, I was on a roll here, but I wasn't sure if this is really what I wanted to do. I had all these other desires, and I didn't want to compete with my brother, Bo, who was, a wonderful actor, and my father. And I said, "Oh, it's too, I just want to avoid that." So I thought, "Oh, all right, yeah. So I'll do this occasionally with myself. I'll experiment, with myself, and I'll do things that I don't want to do just to see what the effect of that is." So I said, "All right, I'm going to do this part, and this might put the nail in the acting coffin. I might just say, this is, So I went into the experience like that, and it was very unusual because if you're lucky, you'll get a couple of weeks of rehearsal, and then you shoot for, 10 weeks or so. And this was flipped around. We rehearsed for 8 weeks. And then we shot for 2 weeks. And we shot the whole play. I think it was over 4 hours or maybe 6 hours. I don't know how long. It was a long, we shot the whole play. But it was rehearsing for 8 weeks with these masters, with Frederick March and Robert Ryan, Lee Marvin, these guys, they've been doing it for so long and were so good at it. And working with them, I saw that this anxiety, this fear aspect that you have of performing, coming, having to pull it off right now when the camera, but, and I saw that they were just as anxious as I was about it, about doing material, I mean, doing justice to the material, And Frederick March, he was in his 80s or 90s, and he was, so concerned and getting it right, And I was doing this scene with Robert Ryan, and was it going to be a long, long scene? They had these big mags on the camera that went for about 10 minutes, and he was sitting there waiting to. For the guys to say action, he's got his hands on the table, and they say, "Oh no, wait, okay, rolling, okay, up. Oh no, wait, this light needs to be trimmed or whatever." And so he stopped and he took his hands off the table, and he had these big puddles of sweat under his hands. And I said, "Bob, after all these years, you're still nervous with it?" He said, "Oh yeah, I'd really be nervous if I wasn't nervous." He says, "This is the way it is." So that was an important lesson for me, not only for the acting, but just in life general, that fear is, you don't have to be afraid of the fear. That's something that we, and you can kind of befriend that feeling. And that served me well, that lesson in life and in acting. So that was a big turning point. And after that, I didn't particularly love my performance in that show, but I said, "Oh yeah, maybe I can do this." I enjoyed it. I enjoyed working with those guys, you mentioning my mom and my dad. My mother was very. She's probably the best actor of the whole bunch. She met my mother in UCLA in the drama department. And she would always, encourage us to put on plays and entertain us and so forth. It was, making movies is kind of an extension of that. It's a play, right? You play, It can be very serious or dark sometimes, but there is a playful side to it.
I want to skip ahead a few years and talk about this movie called Winter Kills by William Richard. And the reason I want to talk about it is because I read that the director moved to Malibu to your street and worked at a deli near you, and then just managed to find you and perform some of the lines to you because he wanted so badly to have you in the movie and had no other way of getting to you. Is this
I
true? And
don't know about, I don't know about that.
this is some kind of online legend.
That's the first time I ever heard that story. But Bill Richard, what a man! This guy, first his first film, and look at the cast that he got. Can you imagine? Elizabeth Taylor,
John Huston.
John Huston, Dashira Mifune.
Mifune was just such a, I didn't know he was in some film from the 70s, American film.
It's all from this guy's charisma, Billy's charisma, and he was so wonderful. He's like, "I got this idea, man." A Sterling Hayden is in it, and we had. It bring back Tony Perkins was in it. I mean, there's so many, it goes on and on, the cat, and we got shut down with about we had, two or three major scenes, Sterling Hayden, a scene and all these scenes that we didn't show. And it was depressing. You can imagine for him, especially. And about a month after we got they shut us down because we weren't paying the union dues, and all the people were kind of, were working for free, and it was crazy. But anyway, about a month later, after they shut us down, he calls me and goes, "I got an idea." I said, "What?" He says, "Oh, I think I've got this script, and I think we can get some money to make it in Germany. And then it's going to be a big hit, and then we'll get the money to finish Winter Kills." And I said, "Billy, really?" And he says, "Yeah, man, are you into it?" I said, "Okay, we're off." And so I went to Germany, and we made this weird little movie called, I don't know, it's a couple of different names, American Success, I think it's one of the names, and his prophecy proved to be true. We got some money from that film to finish Winter Kills. And just recently, my mind is, Quentin, but his last name is escaping me.
Tarantino?
Yes. Yeah. Quentin Tarantino. He was a fan of the film, and now just a few months ago, I think he got behind it and sponsored it being re-released, so other people are seeing it. But it's funny how things work out, huh?
Wow. Yeah, that one seems like a crazy story, and that story about Bill moving to Malibu. I need to find out how that got around. Apparently, he just needed you in the role.
Everybody, all those people, he said the same thing. He probably moved to where John Huston lived, and I'd gotten to work with John Huston earlier in my career in Fat City,
right.
With Stacy Keach and Susan Terrell and Candy Clark, who I ended up living with for a couple of years after that movie. But John Huston, it was amazing working with him as a director and then an actor, and the difference. It was really fascinating.
What was the difference?
Well, as a director, I was always kind of jealous of his relationship with Stacy, because they were playing backgammon, and with me, he kind of kept me on my heels. He wanted me a little off balance, and he would tease me about, it was all about fight, boxing. And he says, we've got you signed up, you're going to go and do a box. He would tease me about really putting me in the ring with guys, but it was an interesting relationship. Then as an actor, it was almost like he was giving all the other actors a lesson about how to treat a director. Now, Bill Richard, this was the first movie, and John would say, how was it, Bill? Was this what you were looking for? Any ideas? And he was very gracious and friendly with me on that one, too, just kind of hanging out, and, just a different dynamic, between those things. That was kind of fascinating to me. He's such a great director and great actor. I loved him in Orson Welles' last film, The Other Side of the Wind. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I have. I mean,
and my dear friend Peter, who was also in that film, he was so great. Miss him.
Yeah, that's been one of the big losses of the last couple of years for our world, for sure.
I'll say.
Yeah. Well, I know that you've talked about Tron so much across the years, but I did want to ask a little bit about Tron. There you go.
Ask away.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Donning the original Tron helmet right now.
Yes.
I'm heading off this Saturday to play a part in the third installment of the Tron story. I'm excited about that.
You look fabulous. This looks great. I hope this is what
What's
you
going on
use.
my head? I don't know if my head has grown or the thing shrunk, but
How so I want to start with the first Tron. When you got the script, at the time CGI was new, right? The concept of CGI was, I mean, brand new. So what did you think? I mean, did you have any reservations? Did you wonder, like, how are we going to make this? Is this going to turn out looking good? What were the thoughts, running through your head?
Well, as we talk about Tron, Steven Lisberger pops into my head. He's the guy who developed the whole idea and the filmmaker who was director. He's the main guy behind all the Tron stuff. And like Bill Richard, he was so enthusiastic, and he really had this vision he wanted to do. And that's what kind of I got that was the whirlpool, the beautiful his love of his idea. It just lured me in, and I said, "Okay, let's get into this." And it was so primitive and modern all at the same time. I mean, the sets were black duvetyne with white adhesive tape, on the thing, shot in 70mm black and white, hand tinted by some ladies in Korea, I think. It was such a wild thing. And I remember being on the set, and we were in these tight leotards, with dance belts, sitting down in a dance belt for a guy. I don't know if it's the same for women, probably not. But that was challenging. But we're in these white leotards with these stripes and these helmets on and black and white set. And I remember leaving the sound stage and color of was just would fly in and just blow your mind how it affected you when you denied yourself for the whole day and black just seeing black and white. Yeah, crazy. And now we're doing the third one.
How has that been? I mean, how has that been being part of this franchise across so many decades at this point? I mean, the way you have, franchises are common these days, but there have been such huge gaps between these movies. And it for a movie that is so technological, I feel like every time you're shooting a new iteration, it's like a whole new world.
It's wild. Jared Leto is the star of this third one. I'm really anxious to work with him. I mean, I admired his work, and to see what the technology is going to be all about. When I did the Tron 2, the Tron Legacy, we had to put all these dots on our face and all these kind of things.
Motion capture stuff,
Don't
right?
keep
And yeah.
No, that's all passe. You don't have to do it anymore. I had to play myself as a young guy, and they're getting, or not as a young guy, as another character, but the same guy, but it was going to be digitally created, the part of Clue.
De-aged, I think you were. That
Yeah, I
was like.
don't know what it was, but I didn't like the way I looked in that movie. I felt like I looked more like Bill Maher than myself. I don't know. It was kind of bizarre. But the technology, I'm anxious to see what this one will be. And I hear there's in a way there's even less AI stuff in this. It's going to be more practical sets, and they're beautiful, beautiful sets that I've seen. So we'll see. We'll see how it all.
Well, super excited to see the new one. Let's talk. I'm going to skip ahead of a couple because just because of the time. I thought maybe we could talk about Crazy Heart because, as I mentioned at the beginning, you turned down that role many times, and that one was a real whirlpool, right? That one was a whirlpool you fell
Oh man.
into.
And all these movies we've been talking about are all these young directors who've had this vision. Scott Cooper, one of the best directors I've ever worked with. Another guy, another movie that got off the sink, but another first-time guy. is Steve Clovis. I got it. Wrote that script when he was 25, The Fabulous Baker Boys. And first thing directing it, Mark Rosenberg, the producer, a lot of other heavy directors wanted to do that movie, but Mark, the producer, held out for this young kid to direct it, and he did such a beautiful job, Steve. But let's get back to Scott. Yeah, I turned it down for a few years because, well, the excuse that I gave to myself was that there was no music to it. It was all about music, and if there were no songs, it was that was a big missing part.
As in the script didn't have songs, or it didn't yet have songs? What did you...
It didn't have any songs, and being a musician myself, this is like a dream come true. They want to make a movie where I get to do music and play. Yeah, but if it stays in the dream world, it's safe. If you put it out and really do it, there's a that it's going to be a bad experience or it's going to fall. It was too precious for something, too big a thing. And so I and then I was in a place where I'm getting other offers to do, other things to do, considering other things. And so I said, the excuse I gave myself was, well, no music, there's no. And so that was, I got out of it. I didn't get into that whirlpool. I missed it. Oh, I get to go down. But then I meet down the river comes this old friend, T-Bone Burnett. And he says, what do you think about this Crazy Heart movie? I said, why? You read the script? He goes, yeah, what do you think? I said, well, I don't know. What do you think? There's no music to it. And he goes, oh, that's the easy part, man. He says, I said, what, Ema, are you interested in doing it? And he says, well, I'll do it if you do it. So
How could you say no?
that was too serendipitous, I just I said, okay, let's go. Let's see what this, let's, again, doing an experiment on myself. I say, okay, you're afraid? Okay, go ahead and do that and see what happens. And it was just a wonderful experience. Bob Duvall was supporting this young director very much the way Mark Rosenberg supported Steve Clovis, and he got to, and I got to work with him. He's playing my best friend in the show, and get to work with my buddy T-Bone and Stephen Bruton, who was so instrumental in pulling that off. And Scott. Scott is interesting where directors come from, whether they're writers or cinematographers or actors. And Scott was coming from acting, but also a wonderful writer, man. And so he brought all his talents and, gosh, it was great working with him.
Well, I thought maybe we could end quickly with a more recent role, and that's The Old Man, which
Oh,
we have confirmed that you are not. Your memory is still
yeah.
tip
I
top.
don't know if I qualify, although we got a lot of old men in that show.
Yeah.
We got John Lithgow, who's a terrific actor, wonderful. We become dear friends. Joel Grey, who I think trumps us all regarding age, is in his 90s.
But
Wonderful role.
it's your return to television in a way.
Yeah, there you go. And it's
Yeah.
so, I was, part of my resistance, like we were talking about, there was no music. So in this one, I said, oh, I don't know if it's if movies, do they take more time and it's more polished, but there was such great stuff coming out of the tube these days. Succession, I was blown away by that. I'm a big fan of 1015. If you know that.
I do, and I read that you're a fan of it, and I was that was a
Yeah,
very...
and Maya, who is I want to say Erskine. I'm not
Yes,
sure.
Maya Erskine, yeah.
Erskine, wow, what an actor. And now she's doing this thing, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, that she's so great and gets to play her own age. But
Yep.
what an acting lesson.
Hey, you did
Wonderful.
that in Tron Legacy.
What?
Played
What?
some played a younger
Oh, not
younger
13 or however. She's playing, she's 30 in her 30s and she's playing a kid in the 7th grade or something. And just so remarkable. I just love that. But the old man, getting back to the old man, so one of the things that, my resistance that came up was, oh, it's not going to be as high quality as movies, but then all this great stuff started to come out. And then I thought, oh, my dad, he did several TV series, and I remember how hard he worked and blah, blah, blah. And but then I met with John Steinberg and Warren Littlefield and Dan Schatz. John Steinberg is the showrunner and the writer, and it's all came out of his mind based on a Tom Perry book called The Old Man. But again, I met with these guys and they started to tell me their vision, and it was like, and they pulled their magic on me, and I got stuck in the whirlpool, and here I
Yep.
am. Just finished the second season.
Oh, wow. When does it
Wonderful.
come out?
I'm not sure when it's going to come out, but I had a wonderful time. We talk about casting, and it's not only the casting of the actors, but the cinematographers, the casting of the directors, the everything, kind of who's at this party, who you're working with. And man, everybody was so terrific to work with. Amy Brenneman, Alia Shawkat, John Lithgow. And it's very interesting because each episode has a different director. I thought, oh, that might throw me, but all the directors have been cast so well. I've enjoyed working with all of them. And so it's been really a different experience. And also in a movie, you kind of know you got a beginning and an end to the thing. And this, it's like life. You don't know what's going to happen next. You don't know where what that next episode is going to be about, or what's going to happen to your character. So that's fascinating.
Well, I think the show is really kind of a testament to the fact that you've avoided the persona, you've avoided the pigeonholing, you're decades into your career and you're still reinventing yourself. So, congratulations on that, Jeff, and congratulations again on the Chaplin Award. We can't wait to welcome you to Lincoln Center next week. And thank you so much for giving me the time today.
Thanks a lot. Nice talking with you, David Gunn.
The Film Comment podcast features original music by Greg Einge. Film Comment is a publication of Film at Lincoln Center. Since 1962, Film Comment has been the home of independent film journalism, publishing in-depth interviews, critical analysis, and feature coverage of mainstream, arthouse, and avant-garde filmmaking from around the world. Visit us online at filmcomment.com.